Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and our mission is to support the military community in their civilian career. Today's episode number 349, Finding Your Identity and Value After the Military with Josh Atkinson.
I had a call this morning with a staff sergeant in Germany trying to get into consulting as a possible field with supply chain background. He had no idea where he wanted to go. It was great. We talked for over an hour just helping him out to understand his journey and lay out a potential plan for him, you know, whether it's certifications or how to target proof and improve his value based on where he knows he wants to go. And the truth is he doesn't know. So we were able to step it back a little bit and help him focus effort in a much more tactical way rather than just kind of spray and pray and hope you hit a target, you know, which I think is also why veterans get out, get a job and then go, I don't want to be here. Well, because you did it through an impersonal method and you never took the time to even figure out what you wanted to do. Right? You stuck in line with your current career path into a job you didn't really want because you didn't know anywhere else to go, into a company you know nothing about. And you got there and went, this sucks. And you left.
The top two reasons to listen to this interview are, one, straight talk. Josh is very direct about the struggles he has faced in his career and transition. The wisdom he shares is incisive, and I think a lot of veterans will appreciate both the sincerity and authenticity of his advice. Two, consulting and project management. We talk about Josh's experience with both consulting and project management and why veterans may like either of these career paths. Beyond the Uniform has over 350 podcast episodes and 20 videos with America's top leaders, including Jocko Willink, the former CEO of Pepsi, NFL players, and more. They are all free at beyondtheuniform.org. If you benefit from Beyond the Uniform and would like to help get this in front of more members of the military community, please consider donating at beyondtheuniform.org/donate. You can also text SUPPORTBTU to 33777, and we will send you additional information. Our cost of production is $300 per month. We are an all-volunteer team, and we could use your financial support. That is at beyondtheuniform.org/donate or by texting SUPPORTBTU to 33777. With that, let's dive in to my conversation with Josh. So joining me today in Bristow, Virginia, my guest is Josh Atkinson. Josh, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Justin. It's great to see you again after about 20 years.
I know. It's been a very long time. And it's funny for listeners who have listened to Ian's interview. After I wrapped up Ian's interview, he had talked about Josh and just how he's the crazy idea person for PM ProLearn. And we were delayed in starting the interview because Josh has some good ideas for Beyond the Uniform. I was seeing that idea guy in action. Well, for listeners, let me give the quick rundown, a very brief bio. Josh is a consultant at Whitney, Bradley, and Brown. We'll talk about it as WBB going forward, as well as a training consultant at PM ProLearn. He started out the Naval Academy just a couple years behind me, after which he served in the Marine Corps for over 11 years. He went on to serve in the reserves as well. And really excited. There's a lot of content we can cover today. So let me just make space at the start. Josh, what's not in that public bio that you want listeners to know?
God, there's so much to put in there. One fact I put down, I'm a passionate beef smoker. I grew up in Southern California, and I thought barbecue was anything you cooked on a grill. And then I married a Texan, and she said, I want some barbecue, and I cooked some hamburgers. And it was like, that's not barbecue. Barbecue's its whole meat food category. So got introduced to smoking brisket, did some research. She got me a smoker for my birthday a few years ago, and I just like it. I got my own rubs and my own ways of doing things as always, and it's best with a good Shinerbach beer poured onto it in the end. So random fact, but I knew nothing of what barbecue really was until I left home and married a Texas woman. So
I'm picturing our next webinar as how to smoke properly, and we'll get a lot of cigar aficionados joining and then being disappointed. Yep. But maybe it'll be a good conversion. So let's start with you transitioned from the Marine Corps in 2016 after about 11 years. Can you talk us about that transition, the why and the how?
Yeah, the why and the how. So I guess up front, the hardest thing, and this will lead into the future conversation, is I failed as a Marine, right? I never planned on getting out. I planned on doing a 20-year career. I started out as an aviator, an 11-year overall commitment, going, yeah, you just go through the pipeline, you make major, you move on. And I failed. You know, I struggled with the fraternity pledge mentality in the aviation world. My own arrogance, my own intelligence, my own perceptions got in the way. And, you know, I got into a community that was a very tight-knit community, the Harrier world. Phenomenal aircraft to fly, some great people that work there. But it didn't fit. You know, there was a, your corner's over there until you're good enough to be given permission to sit at the table. You know, and I just really struggled. Going to the academy, I was very comfortable with rank and very comfortable being around senior folks. I like speaking my mind. And I always had the perception that once you're there, you're on the team. There is no pledging. There's no need to prove yourself. You've already been accepted. You're here. You know, you've got your eagle of an anchor. Welcome to the team. And that wasn't what I found. You know, what I found is that there's a dynamic insecurity that goes on in the military with leadership, where you're always trying to understand how people perceive you and playing the right politics game. I hate saying that, but it came down to that, you know. And I went to the community. I stood up for my class. I was a class lead. They had some concerns, so I talked to safety about it. I tried to do the right thing, and then started getting this branding as you're not a team player. You know, I got to the fleet. Normal new guy mistakes, you know, didn't understand it. And out of nowhere, it's like, hey, you're grounded pending an FFPB. And that kind of shocked me. So then I turned everything into running operations. I worked really hard, and apparently there was a personality conflict that led me down the road of the CO ignoring a unanimous investigation that I was a great pilot and making sure that the paperwork read otherwise. You know, so that sucked. I felt betrayed. Didn't get it. I was like, all right, you know, dive into the next thing. I got a 3-week short pump notice for an IA, missed the birth of my first daughter, you know, by being deployed, you know. So you're kicked out of the Harrier community, deployed, missed the birth of my daughter, you know, and God knew what he was doing through all of it, you know. And not to go over religious, but, you know, the verse about Christ and Pontius Pilate, where he's like, don't you know I have the power to set you free? And Christ says, you have no power that my father gave you, you know, kind of just resonated in my head that I have a journey and God's got me on a path and I will just keep being faithful. And great deployment, had a phenomenal leadership over there, people that believed in me and didn't care about my background or how I got to where I was, but gave me the opportunity to run and run hard. So I got my first choice, transitioned to ground logistics, loved it, took the operational mentality of the squadron and applied it to the infantry with planning and logistics and how you run everything there. Loved it. You know, interviewed with Colonel Zagurski, who was the CO at the time. He's like, I want to make sure you have the right mindset going from aviation to infantry. He's like, you'll do well. You know, he believed in me, gave me wide latitude and said, run hard. And he supported me. And it was great. The next CO came in, again, I'm leaving them intentionally unnamed out of respect. He wanted everything his own way, was threatened by intelligence, didn't want anyone to disagree with him, ended up getting 8 people killed in a mortar mishap, and then fired me. So second time in my career, I'm getting fired, you know, and I'm like, I'm doing everything I know how to do to be the leader I know how to be, to take care of my people and defend the people that I support. And in the end, I'm getting relieved, you know, and so that hurt, you know, like, what the heck, you know, I'm doing everything I can, and moved on, went to the G4. I'm filling lieutenant colonels and major's billets as a captain and doing really well. And then it comes time for major, you know, I deployed with SOCOM, Human Task Force XO, you know, or Human Intelligence Task Force XO, and I don't make major. You know, I've got these great rock star fit reps, but they're all joint, and I get passed over again, you know. And it's like, okay, I'm gonna keep driving, I'm gonna keep doing what I know how to do. And, you know, and God and I had our own conflicts at this point of like, what the heck? And but I knew that God had a plan. You know, and lo and behold, I get passed over twice for major. You know, and now it's like, well, now what? You know, what do I want to do? And my father-in-law asked me, he's like, you know, what do you want to do when you become a civilian now? So I want to be free to think, lead teams, and help people. And it's like, so what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't care what it is, as long as I'm doing that. And it was hard, you know, so emotionally it was hard. You know, timeline's coming, don't want to get out, I have to get out, trying to figure out how to network, how to get a job. Used a headhunter in transition, you know, because I figured that's the best way. I went with an elitist headhunter called Alliance Careers. The best thing they did was send you through training to understand what you might want to do as a civilian. So, you know, in going through that, I was like, I don't want to do sales. I'm never going to be a salesman. I hate sales. Which that'll be ironically humorous later on. I got introduced to the field of, you know, operations and then project management, and really became passionate about project management. I had talked with my current boss at the G4 about project management and about PMP and figured out how to use unit training funds to get certified. So I was certified in project management, Lean Six Sigma. It became a field I liked because it let me do what I wanted to do, right? I get to lead teams, be free to think, and help people. What I didn't know is the free to think part is really more corporate culture, not job or field of work. It has more to do with who you work with and the environment established by a company, you know? So, but I went through the dance of using the headhunter. It was speed dating to a marriage in a weekend. I interviewed with 10 companies over 2 days. The music stopped. There was one that was interested in me and only one I was still interested in. So I moved to Philly. Got into heavy construction project management. Loved the field. I was doing nuclear power maintenance and combined cycle power generation work and heavy rigging. I had to apply my engineering background from the academy, my logistics background in the Marine Corps, and leadership. I mean, it was a great field. You know, I still advocate and love project management as a field. Then the free to think part came in of not really being able to lead the team like you want to. It was a union culture. You know, after being there for a year, you know, took a 40% pay cut when I left active duty. Started feeling used. You know, it's like, hey, I want to do more. I want to get paid what I'm worth. And you never quite know what your value is or who I am. And the unions look at you like, you're not my boss. It's like, I'm the project manager. You're not your boss. Like, no, I work for the other union guy over there. So there's this culture disconnect, you know, of like, I don't get it. I get the structure. I like the work. I'm crushing it. I doubled profit on every project I ran for a year. You know, and then you go ask for a raise after a year and it's like, let's give it another year. I'm like, wait a second. Like, I don't get it. Just like the military, I'm working hard. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Like, why doesn't stuff move like it's supposed to? So it was hard, you know, but I was glad to have a job. And that's where the reserves kind of came in of, I didn't immediately go into the reserves. I knew I kind of wanted to stay in the reserves, but I didn't know where I was going to land with the work.
Let me pause you before we talk about reserves, because I love what you're saying around, I mean, essentially it's a discussion around culture, right? It's like finding the right culture, finding values alignment, finding the little things that drive you crazy of, you know, I know that feeling of not feeling appreciated for impact. And I know that feeling of not having the inclusion that I would want in an environment. I think I can imagine people who thrive by this sense of like the haves and have nots and pay your dues and sit over there. And I think that culture works great for many people. It would just drive me nuts. And one thing I'm appreciating, especially about when you're describing that in the military, is, you know, I've definitely had culture clashes. And one thing I appreciate about being out of uniform is yes, there can be financial constraints and other constraints where I can't leave a job, but there's still the option to leave a job and say like, look, mm-hmm. This is not a good fit. Best of luck. And I can definitely appreciate the frustration in uniform of not necessarily having that autonomy. And I love that you took stock of the 11 years in the military. You seems like you did a great job of assessing what worked and more importantly, what didn't. And that was the framework that you applied to the next job. And I think it's great mm-hmm. for listeners to realize that it seems like the next job was hitting on some things that worked, but still there was the pieces that didn't work culturally. And in my view, just my personal take, that's part of the process is trying something, being aware of what works, what doesn't. And it's not a failure or a success. It's like, okay, I've collected data about what works for me and what doesn't. And then your next decision becomes more informed. And so we can get back to the reserves, but I just wanted to chime in there about that narrative. And I appreciate your vulnerability and authenticity in telling that story.
Yeah. And you ping on another thought though on the loyalty aspect and that feeling of autonomy and the freedom to leave. You know, which I guess I'll get the reserves again later. But one of the struggles I had is after feeling like I wasn't in a great fit, you know, at this job, which again, I love the work, I love the people, but it was a struggle for the family. I was gone all the time, the pay was less. And so it wasn't a long-term good fit. But I felt like I couldn't leave. You know, I saw all these ways I could make that company better. And I think one of the struggles I had was in the military, you make lemonade, right? You're given lemons every day and you make lemonade. So you don't kick anybody off your team. You take whatever you have and you always grow your team to make it as good as possible. You can't leave and they can't leave. So you just do with what you have. And when I went to this company, I saw so many ways I wanted them to improve, you know, applying the TNR mentality of the military to the training that they were going through. I wrote white papers for the company on how to prove and improve their certification process and how they manage training to give a quality metric spread of grades so that you knew who did what and develop standardization on processes so that across the country, I call it the McDonald's effect of a cheeseburger in Maine should taste like a cheeseburger in California. So you wanted this standardization and consistency that you get from the aviation world and the military of, you know, if I fly East Coast, West Coast, or overseas, I need to be able to fly together with a squadron and not crash. So you build this uniformity, and I wanted to help them grow so much, but then it became a struggle of they didn't want to grow, but I didn't feel like I could leave because they gave me my shot, right? I owed them. I owed them for the job. I owed them for taking a chance on me. I felt like out of the military, I owed them for giving me a home, you know, because that's what you do in the military. And the truth is that that wasn't the case. I didn't owe them anything. I didn't owe them loyalty, you know, and I finally got a mentor at Raytheon through networking, which is another stuff we'll get on later. But I got put in touch with a retired 3-star admiral named Wally Massenberg, who to this day I'm indebted to at Raytheon. And he's like, what would they do if they were hurting? You know, if the company was struggling and going under, are they going to hold on to you? And I was like, no. So then why are you holding on to them if you don't feel like that's in your next best interest? You know, what do you owe them? And he's like, have you made them money? I said, yeah, I've increased profits. He's like, have you done your job well? I said, yeah. He said, then you don't owe them anything. You have done your job well. You are free to choose what is best for you to go where you think is best for you to go and take care of your family. That's okay. You're not a bad person for wanting to choose what's best for you and your family. And that was so hard for me. You know, I felt like I was failing in my loyalty as a man and for that company to leave and walk away, that it was wrong to change jobs. And once I mentally got over that aspect, the world became so much bigger. You know, the autonomy aspect you're mentioning became real of being able to create my own future, being able to network and grow to what I want to become, being able to find a new path. You know, if project management wasn't it, then I have the freedom to re-navigate and reinvent myself based on who I want to be and go to where I want to go. And I'm not stuck in a stovepipe. You know, I think a lot of veterans struggle with, hey, I'm getting out and I was an MP on active duty, so I need to become an MP. Why? Well, because all of my pedigree is MP, so I need to become a policeman. Do you like it? No, but it's all what I know. Again, also why I like the project management field is that's a great transition of taking what you know, applying it to a different skill set and getting to somewhere new, because everyone's a project manager in the military. You know, so that to me opened doors of I'm not an infantryman, I'm not a logistician, I'm a project manager, and I can tailor that to become what I want to be. But it was hard. It took me a lot to get over the feeling that I was betraying a company because I knew what it felt like to be betrayed and be left out. And I didn't want to do that to anybody. So it was hard. But again, you talk about the autonomy. It's absolutely true. And anyone listening to this, like, you don't have to stay where you don't want to be, and you can go to where you want to go. And I'd love to talk to you to help you get there.
Now, I love that. The two things I'll point out, you know, I when I left business school, I accepted an offer at a consulting company and then wanted to start a company instead. And thank God I was able to talk to civilian mentors because I had a big problem reneging my offer. I'm like, well, I gave my word and all this stuff. And across the board, both the veterans I talked to had been out for a while, as well as people who had never served. They were like, look, man, like, just do what's right for you. Like, it's not going to serve the company by going there if that's not what you want to do. And I'm so glad I followed that. And, you know, I hear what you're saying. I think for listeners, it is a consistent challenge that I see that, people who have served in the military overemphasize what's good for the group. And when you leave the military, there's a beautiful aspect of that trait, and it's a liability to you, your family, and I think the world when you start doing things and compromising because you think it's what you should do rather than what you know is right for you and your needs. And I think you're a perfect illustration of that. The second thing I wanted to point out is that as I'm hearing your story about, you know, I hear a man who wants to be able to roll up his sleeves and have a direct impact and be an agent of change. And it's clear to me from what Ian said in our conversation prior to this call, like, you're bursting and bristling with ideas that can improve an organization. And so based on that limited amount, when I hear your story, I'm like, man, I would not want Josh, at least at this point in your story, I wouldn't want you at a large organization, like the military, like this first job, where the systems are in place and change is very difficult to make, and there's an established hierarchy. I want to see you in a smaller organization, sub 50 people, where it's much more malleable, where it's much more open to influence. And I think it's just important for listeners to recognize that if these aspects of Josh's stories are resonating, to consider a smaller organization. And if it doesn't resonate, that might be a sign that you're a great fit for a larger organization where that's not a component. It's just, there's no right or wrong here, but it's just recognizing your flavor, recognizing your unique intrinsic values and how they drive your decision making. So maybe we pick up on the reserves piece, but I want to make sure I threw that in before we go on.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's where it is hard. And I think part of it too, goes back to, you know, leadership in Maslow's hierarchy, is the hard part of leaving too is the stability of the known. And you can attest to this in your own journey, I'm sure, of, you know, and it'll come back later. But the military, you have all this stability. You have a known structure, you have a known growth pattern. You know when you're getting promoted, you know when you're going to move, you know how long you're going to job. You have a very mapped out training pipeline from zero to infinity and then retirement. And it's this structure that really comes down to Maslow's like foundation of safety and security that allows you to then be free to kind of bounce around above it, right? You're free to then explore within some limits because the foundation is always taken care of and it's always in place. And that's hard to realize too when you get out, that that foundation isn't guaranteed anymore. You know, I think that's also why veterans give a loyalty to a company they may not need, because I need insurance and I need something coming home. Unless you're retired, right? I hugely advocate guys who are close to retirement retire, because that really gives you a foundation to let you do whatever the heck you want because you have insurance and your mortgage paid for the most part. But yeah, it's an interesting tie-in, you know, culture-wise and safety-wise.
Could you, I mean, this also might tie in to another concept I wanted to make sure we cover, which is like, you've talked about this metaphor that you describe transitioning veterans as fostering a foreign orphan. And could you delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, so the foreign orphan metaphor, again, came up as I was coaching veterans in my own journey of figuring it out. And I attributed it to, again, with my job, the union world when I wasn't union, but you are adopted and birthed into the military. So I guess let me give the entire structure here. You know, you were born at boot camp, right? You have no freedoms. You have no thought, much like a child. They tell you what to eat, sleep, stand, walk, act, feed, dress. Everything is told to you, much like a child who isn't free to think for themselves. And then you grow up, you know, after boot camp, you're, you know, pre-kindergarten, you're told very limited what you're allowed to do. They give you so many privileges and freedoms. They tell you what to do. And then over time, you become a member of this family. You know, you become a big brother initially, then you become a dad, you know, in theory, you know, for the men out there, or a mom, not to go one way or the other. But, you know, eventually you kind of have that grandparent role in senior leadership where you have, you know, parents underneath you, but you're born into this family. They adopt you. They provide everything for you, your family, your household, everything's secured and given to you. And your last name changes to veteran. You are now forever a veteran. That's who you are. That's the way the rest of the world will see you. And when you get out, the best a company can give you is to hopefully foster you, right? There's no guarantee. They're not going to adopt you. They're not going to guarantee you 5 years of life or a four-year commitment that you will knowingly promote and grow up in this family. It's all performance driven. Now, the good ones try to create a culture where they will adopt you into the family and teach you the cultures and courtesies. A lot of them just kind of go, hey, you're here to make me money. You're a part of this organization. You can eat here if you want to while you're good enough. And if I don't like you anymore, you can go back to the orphanage. And the whole time you don't fit, right? I don't speak your language. I don't understand your culture. I'm driven and I speak four-letter acronyms and I cuss all the time because I don't quite know what's going on and I got tattoos. And you look at me like I'm, you know, some alien from another world because you're worried about PTSD because you saw stories about this stuff and nobody knows. So you're kind of this weird outsider trying to fit in a company with a culture you don't know. And again, there's no guarantees. There's no adoption possible because that's not how the corporate world works. You know, why I think veterans get drawn to GS work or government work is, again, it's that same safety, stability, security thing of I can get adopted again. I can go back somewhere where I can't be kicked out and I'm safe. But for me, when I finally understood that concept that I'm free to leave too, and I'm okay to make the decision that's best for me, I don't have to stay in that family. If I don't like the family, I can go. If I don't like the culture, I can leave. I'm not stuck there. So just like it is a downside that, you know, a company may not adopt you, it also gives you that attitude to go, I don't have to adopt it either. But I think mentally that was a big piece for me to realize, and it's still a struggle, that no company out there will ever adopt you again, right? You will never get that same feeling of camaraderie because it's just not how corporate world works. You know, you can build friendships, you can build support structures, but you never have that feeling. And that's maybe a great lead-in for the reserve question. You know, for me, the reserves was such a huge mental stability thing where I'd felt abandoned by the military, but you didn't fit and you got a family reunion once a month, right? I got to go back home at least once a month and have a family reunion and be around people that were like me, right? I got to talk to people about the civilian struggles because they were civilians too as a reservist. I got to network with people and about what I was going through. I got to ask questions about corporate worth and certifications and how do you grow and promote, because I had a new family in the reserves. There was a lot like the old family, but now they could relate to the civilian side too. You know, and it was a great, for me, stabilizer. You had benefits that you knew. You had TRICARE. You made, you know, $1,000 a weekend. So it was a nice little added income since I wasn't making as much as I thought I would on active duty. But it gave me a chance to kind of live in both worlds of being who I was and what I knew and also grow into the new world of civilian. So I'm a huge advocate for guys that are in transition, not as a permanent thing. I understood the mentality of I'm done and I want to go as far away as possible. Right? I got used, I got left, I'm done. Right? I wanted nothing to do with the military. I wanted to go pure civilian to get paid what you're worth and be valued for who you are, right? The grass is greener BS that you believe. Only to find out that it wasn't there, you know? And the reserves for me were a big chance to let me transition on my own. And for, again, those who are in getting out, I've talked to a bunch of officers. You're like, I'm just done. I want to go cold turkey. And I'm like, look, it gives you a way out. If your culture sucks, go back on orders for, you know, take a set of orders and try again. You know, try your taste of this career field. And if you don't like it, go back on orders and then use the benefits of the military, grow your capabilities and certifications and licenses because the military can pay for those. And then try a new field. And if you put your toe in the water there and don't like it, go back on orders for a while. I mean, it gives you this unlimited flexibility to explore without the risk of being abandoned, you know? For me, that was the next hardest thing if I didn't make major again in the reserve. So I did get kicked out. And then I tried to transition into the guard, and I was told there's no waiver once you've been passed over. You can't go into the guard anymore, and you're stuck. I was like, well, wait a second. Like, so now I can't be a Marine. I can't go into the Navy, and now I can't go into the guard either. So I'm just like in flying. I didn't want to stop, but the paperwork says you're not qualified. So now what? But the reserves gave me time to be okay and get over the feeling of being a failure. You know, I knew in my head I wasn't. I knew I'm capable. I know what I'm possible to do, and I think I'm a great asset. But inside, there's that nagging feeling of you failed. You didn't make it, you know? And then you're at a company, and you're kind of always fighting that battle of when is the next person going to say I'm not worth it and I'm not going to make it, you know? And so for me, again, the reserves was just a really great time to kind of stabilize and have a balance and have a feedback loop and a family reunion until I was okay kind of being away from the family, you know, as a pure civilian. So I'm a huge advocate of reserves for that reason.
I think that's great too. I mean, I love this point around the mutual selection where companies don't have an obligation to the individual and the individual doesn't have an obligation to the company. And I love the flexibility on both sides. And I think you're pointing out the pros and cons of that. And then I also appreciate this sense, and I've heard this from a lot of others too, the stability that the reserves do provide and how that can be a counterweight to all the ambiguity going on in this transition. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is how the different opportunities in your career have come about. And I know that networking has played a big role as well. So I want to give you room to talk about networking and advice you have for listeners.
Networking is extremely huge. You kind of learn about it on active duty. As a logistician in the Marine Corps, we learned about it because you never had enough money to do anything you wanted to do. So the way you got stuff was networking, right? The HABU, right? Hook a brother up. You figure out who has what and how to get it and how to network. But it was always on a professional level or a mission focused level, not a personal level. So I got out not really knowing how to do social networking. And then I started working with PM ProLearn, right? Tim Dalhouse, the founder of ProLearn, asked me to join him as a training consultant to see if I could get this entrepreneurial idea off the ground. I said, okay. So I created a strategy of LinkedIn networking where I went from 500 to now 26,000 connections, shamelessly adding anybody who was remotely associated with veterans trying to find people I could help, right? And I would just reach out and say, you know, I'm trying to help veterans get into project management. My unit paid for it. Yours can too. Do you know anybody I can help? You know, and the entire mission and the focus of the team was like, I just want to help people. Do you know anybody out there that needs help? And I want to talk to you. Like, do you know somebody? I want to talk to you. Like, I want to help you. What can I do? So we started this networking thing of just connecting with thousands of veterans around the world to try to help them understand and learn from my mistakes and my lessons and utilize the resources that I'd figured out. So my first opportunity came from a headhunter when I left active duty, but beyond that, it's been networking. My job with Whitney Bradley and Brown, I reconnected through growing my LinkedIn network with one of my TBS fire teammates from 15 years ago named Will Granados, a great Marine. And it was like, hey, we're looking at hiring this colonel. I see you're mutually connected with him. You know, can you tell me about him? And I looked him up. I'm like, no, I have no idea who he is. I just connected with him because he's a veteran. And I haven't even had a chance to talk to him yet. But we rekindled. We reconnected. He's like, I work for a great company, you know, WBB. Send me your resume. Like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? So shot him my resume, you know, and was able to get an informal walk around with the company. Met some key people in the company that learned about who I was and my background and liked who I was. Didn't have any opportunities at the time, but, you know, hadn't even applied to a job yet. It was just a real informal, let's get to know you. What do you do? Here's who we are. Here's who you are. And after talking to Wally, I had a more refined resume. I kind of knew what my corporate value was. In that regards, I was able to give them a figure that I was okay with in terms of salary range and say, this is what I'm kind of looking at doing. You know, and a couple months later, hey, we're looking to grow this department for the Marine Corps team and we like your background. Are you interested? You know, so the job I have at WBB was created purely because of networking. You know, it wasn't hunting on Indeed or looking for a job. It was through the people side of networking. And what that has taught me and what I teach a lot of people now in transition, which I haven't written the article yet on the filter, the screen and the door and understanding the levels of recruiting. And my recruiting friends are going to probably hate me for this one, but recruiters are shit screens, right? Like the recruiters in the military are the door you have to walk through to get into the organization. In the civilian world, a recruiter is an intel collector trying to find a target to present to the targeting team to see if they want to go after it, right? And you as a pursuer of that team are a potential threat in some ways, and all they're doing is filtering out all the unqualified stuff, right? They're not really an advocate for you. They're not the door to get to. The door is somewhere multiple layers behind the recruiter. Well, through networking, and I'll tell veterans, like, go find a company you want to work for and then go find a veteran that works at the company and go send them a message that says, I like your company. Can you tell me more, right? And talk to them, and you'll find out everything you want to know from culture to fit, to salary ranges, to work-life balance, to organization, to mission, to everything you thought you wanted to know about, do I really want to join that team? And then what people don't know is that individual, if they walk your resume to the hiring manager and get you hired, will probably get a bonus. So now you have a veteran on the inside who can relate to you, who has a personal financial incentive to get you hired. And you've not once yet talked to a recruiter or applied to a job. You're networking, right? And I can learn all I want to do to say, look, I really want to go there. And they can hand walk your resume, translate it for you because they speak veteran too, because they're equally tainted, and help you get connected with someone who may want to talk to you before you've ever applied to a job. You know, so the networking piece to me became so big, and a huge thing I teach veterans on is that, you know, I had a guy the day, he's like, I've applied to over 500 jobs on Indeed and not one has responded back. I was like, again, you're throwing your quality against a wall, hoping that you wrote it the right way, that the filter acknowledges you as worth it to talk to. It's impersonal. You know, make job searching and networking personal, and then people want to help other people. I had a call this morning with a staff sergeant in Germany trying to get into consulting as a possible field with supply chain background. He had no idea where he wanted to go. It was great. We talked for over an hour just helping him out to understand his journey and lay out a potential plan for him, you know, whether it's certifications or how to target proof and improve his value based on where he knows he wants to go. And the truth is he doesn't know. So we were able to step it back a little bit and help him focus effort in a much more tactical way rather than just kind of spray and pray and hope you hit a target. You know, which I think is also why veterans get out, get a job and then go, I don't want to be here. Well, because you did it through an impersonal method and you never took the time to even figure out what you wanted to do, right? You stuck in line with your current career path into a job you didn't really want because you didn't know anywhere else to go, into a company you know nothing about. And you got there and went, this sucks. And you left. So the point on networking has been huge for me. And then it goes into the growth of, you know, of PM Pro and helping them. It's been exactly that. You know, the growth at WB, getting a job as a consultant and growing inside the company there has been purely on networking. And then helping other veterans learn about the value of project management is through networking. And just doing that. You know, I have a new hashtag LinkedIn top helper that I put out there kind of as a joke against the LinkedIn top voices. I mean, I love what the voices do as influencers, but like, I don't want to influence anybody. I want to help everybody. Like, and that's the power, I think, of networking, is when you go in willing to help people, other people want to help you too. And as the community of veterans, we can help grow so much.
And you've helped a lot of people around project management. You probably get a ton of questions. What would you want people to know about that? I mean, I know that's like a broad question, but you, I mean, this is something that you do a lot with people. So if you had one way to say this to get in front of a lot of people, what should they know about this?
For veterans, I'd say project management as a field is the closest thing I have found to being in leadership in the military, right? So project management is defined as a temporary endeavor that creates a unique product, service, or result, right? You get a mission, you assemble a team with the capabilities required to accomplish that mission, and then you build a plan and manage the execution of the mission and then turn it over when it's done. It is military project management or military operational planning and execution 101 over and over and over. It's a great field. The gap I see when I'm coaching people is that, you know, PMP in particular, or project management, is not a civilian thing. It is an active duty thing. You know, it is military planning on steroids. And if you can learn the civilian version of project management, it helps you while you're active. And then you can decide if it's what you want to still do when you get out. You know, people come after this, I want PMP after my last name. And I'm like, why? What's the point? It's a lot of mental effort and energy to get something that if you don't want to go into that field, it won't help you as a civilian. But if you're involved in planning in the military, it will help you while you're active, and then you can decide if you want to do it as a civilian. So it gives you a lot of opportunity to either decide or grow on your own. And there's resources while active too. That's the biggest thing. I talked to Ian about it, and I was like, PMP is not a civilian certification. Project management is a military certification that is PME and personal development while you're active. Units can pay for it with unit training funds and other resources that are there because the field aligns with military planning. So there's ways to get certified, whether it's PMP or Agile or ITIL or CompTIA or SecPlus or whatever. And units can pay for it for professional development on a government credit card and help you grow while you're in to then decide what you want to do before you get out. I got PMP, 4 months before I transitioned and went, why didn't I get this earlier in my career? Because this would have really helped me doing FASMO and, you know, IT cutover and a maintenance inspection, all the other things that the military planning process doesn't help you with. You know, so that's my biggest pitch is like, don't wait till you're in transition to get an understanding of project management. Do it while you're active duty.
You know, and this also leads into another thing I wanted to ask you about is like certifications. And you've touched on this a lot, but what else do you want them to know about certifications and the importance of those?
I think it goes to the translation of capability, right? Not just PMP. Certifications in the civilian world most require experience and capability and education, right? So in the civilian world, an MBA is a dime a dozen, but a certification says you have technical capability in a specific field and you have experience in that field. And what it also does is in the process of getting a certification, you learn the language of the industry. So now you can at least speak the language. So we talked about the barrier of veteran versus civilian, and you're always labeled now as veteran, right? There is a preconceived notion by everybody in the civilian world of what that means, most of which aren't accurate on any level, but they get to put it in their head. But if I have a certification in the industry I'm trying to go into, that automatically breaks down barriers of communication because now I speak your language. I'll give you an example. My first job as a project manager, I was the only certified project manager in the company, at least for my branch. So I'm at a nuclear power plant doing a multi-million dollar outage for maintenance, and all of the leads would skip over the project manager and talk to me because I was certified and so were they. And I could speak their language. So So I had instant credibility. They'd never met me before, but I had the same license that they did, and they wanted to talk to me instead of the actual senior project manager because he wasn't certified and spoke a different language. So it bridges the gap of misunderstanding and relevance when you're in transition. Some don't take a lot of effort to get. They're cheaper and faster than a degree, but there's a lot of guys I know, what do you do? I'm getting my master's in business. Why? Because it'll make me marketable. For what market? I don't know, everybody. Okay, great. That's a 2-year multi-$1,000 prospect. You just took your GI Bill that you can't give to your kids anymore to get something that you have no idea what the actual return on investment is going to be. Or I can get my unit to pay for a certification, use government training funds to get it, about a month and a half later, be certified in something, learn a new language, have a new skill set, benefit it while I'm active duty, and get instant credibility when I'm out. Like, faster return, easier to get, and it bridges the capability gap between culture. It gives me credibility, and it teaches me a language that the industry uses. So there's a lot of value in my mind to get certified. And knowing that units can pay for it and there's resources that don't call anything out of your pocket to make you a better military leader and planner and civilian, you know, later on. So I think there's a huge return on that to bridge the gap. And now some of them have job requirements of you must have it to get hired. Well, that's a different story of if you have to get it to get the job and you really want the job, then get it. But again, it gives you a chance to also taste it and go, I don't like that industry. I put in all the work. I got the certification. I don't want that kind of work. Great. But it gives you the chance to do it if you need it. So
I love the, one of the threads of what you're saying is, at least what I'm hearing is this sense of like data collection. And, you know, you get a lot of data when you're in the military about the type of people you want to work with, the type of work, the culture, those things. And I apply that as well to that's, it's an interesting distinction on certifications, which is you can go to an advanced degree, which will take multiple years. You're going to get a lot of information, but it might not, you don't really know what you're going to use it for versus a certification, which you might be able to acquire on active duty. You might be able to get it faster. And then you're able to determine with less time invested and money invested, does this work? There's a phrase I don't exactly agree with 100%, but it's like, don't waste 2 years getting a year of experience. And that's one of the themes I've seen with your story, as well as many others, is every time you're taking a job, you're getting information like, is this right for me? And yeah. If not, move on, like do what's best for you and your family and move on and get more data and learn. And hopefully each time you get a little bit closer, but it's interesting to think of that through certifications as well, like a quick feeding of like, is this what I want to do? Is this stimulate me? Is this the language? And that's one other thing I'll point out is that I think in the military, quitting is awful and it should be. There's a lot of downsides to quitting. You need people who can power through anything. And Raveel Navakant, who founded AngelList, he's been on Tim Ferriss's podcast many times. He talks about the value of quitting, of how good it is to, if you're reading a book and you don't like it, quit it. You don't have to finish it. Like, there's so much value to quitting. And it might be a growth area for people in the military to see that there is a positive aspect to quitting or to doing things in smaller batches of commitment.
Yeah, I agree. And that's part of that, again, getting over the feeling of failure or the choice to say, I quit. You know, I don't like it. I don't like this job. I don't like this company. I don't like this line of work. Stop doing it. You know, obviously don't quit it with no plan of what's next. For some people on your podcast, like, dude, I was just done and I dropped everything and went over here and then reinvented myself. If you have the means to do that, by all means, go ahead. But take that lightly. You know what I mean? Don't quit with no plan, but don't feel like you can't change. You know, don't get stuck in anything, whether it's a job, an industry, a location, a relationship, and feel like there's nothing you can do about it besides tolerate it. You know, that isn't true. And there's so many things you can do to improve on that. So
I'm trying to be judicious. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left here. Let's do this as a choose your own adventure. There's some things I want to know. One thing is around this hashtag crazy idea guy that I've heard in multiple angles and on LinkedIn. Another one is recommended resources, which I always like to ask guests. You can choose your own adventure on what, where to go with that.
All right. I'll do a real quick recommended resources. Then I'll do a crazy idea guy. To me, Simon Sinek, Start With Why, StrengthsFinder 2.0 are probably two great resources. One, to figure out what do you really want to do. It's like $25 for Sinek Start With Why program. My why, which anybody would be like, well, no duh, is to to lead and help others so together I can improve every situation. Right? Like that is what gets me up and going in the morning. It doesn't give me a job field, but it lets me assess a culture of a company to go, am I going to be able to do that? Right? When you find your why, it lets you know if what you're doing is in line with who you really are and what you're really passionate about. Right? I love helping people. I like building teams. I like making stuff great. Right? Which I guess is maybe a great segue into, you know, the hashtag crazy idea guy. Right? I am not an inventor. Ian may disagree with me. I'm more of a tweaker and a one-upper, and I say that with affection of I like taking whatever I can see and optimizing it and making it better, right? And my mind is always running down these crazy ideas of like, well, what if you did this, right? And I wrote an article called See If It Sticks, right? I'm the kind of guy that says throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. You know, my grandpa taught me that you check if spaghetti is done by throwing it against the wall, and if it sticks, it's good, right? So kind of take that same concept of just throw it out there, right? So many people want these purely polished, refined ideas and see if they're vetted, and if they're fully vetted, then you accept them. But I'm more the mentality of I'm going to throw it out and see if it sticks. You know, as we were talking earlier on, hey, a way to potentially optimize the way you do webinars with lower overhead. I was talking to another friend who wanted to start a nonprofit about helping veterans get into classic car rebuilding. And it went from a small conversation into a, well, you can do a pipeline with the local colleges and have people get certifications and do it for nonprofits and, you know, build it as a way to tie in with disabled veterans to build cars for disabled veterans. And it just kind of spun out of control and it just kept on running. Talk to the guys at PM Pro and you know, PM Pro Solutions and the future of potentiality there. I mean, just taking whatever I'm given from any circumstance and trying to provide an outside, unbiased, unfiltered view of whatever that is to find a potential solution to make it better. I'm horrible at coming up with original ideas. I love finding ways to take an idea and make it 20 times 10, you know, better than whatever it was just to help somebody. Right. And at the end of the day, it'd be like, I don't want your idea. I'd be like, okay, I'm good with that. Like, you don't need to take it. I don't need you to accept the advice. I just wanted to help. So I throw it out as help. And it's just kind of been this, you know, dubbed thing from Ian. I'm like, you got some other crazy idea coming up. I'm like, how about this? It's like, oh crap, here comes another one. You know, and, you know, the guys at WB, same thing. Like, what if we did it this way? You know, let's do change management. Let's do it like that. I mean, just always throwing out some new concept to make it better. But again, with an intent and a heart behind, I just want to help people. I want to help everyone be successful. I want to have everything become a viable product that improves and helps everybody. So that's the quick snapshot on the hashtag crazy idea guy.
I love that. And I love that snippet too around your why. And I think it's heavy lifting to craft that and get it crisp like you have it. Could you just say it one more time?
Yeah, it's to lead and help others so together we can improve every situation.
So I love that. And I think that, like you said, that's not going to do everything. That's not going to say I should work at Google as a software engineer, but it becomes a filter. It becomes, it takes something that's completely subjective and makes it a little bit more objective. It allows you to ask that question. We used to do this in hiring. We would come up with criteria of like, what are our team values? And then we would ask the team members like, okay, does this person, how do they do on these values? Of course, it's still more art than science, but it gives you a common language to evaluate opportunities. And it sounds like you've done that in your career. It's become a filter to assess a team, a company, an industry, all of these different things. And I hope listeners can check out, I'll add them in the show notes. Start with why. We had an interview with Peter Drucker, who is Simon Sinek's right-hand man on that topic, StrengthsFinders 2.0, and we'll also add your article, See If It Sticks. All of those are different criteria to help you refine your values, your mission statement, your purpose, whatever you want to call it, and that it's definitely worth the work. Yeah,
I appreciate it. Yeah, StrengthsFinder, I think, is good. Just, again, learn natural giftings. It doesn't tell you an industry. It just helps you learn about yourself and know what your passions are, what you're gifted at. For me, it's, you know, maximizer, activator, woo, communicator, and strategic are my five. And again, just people interact with me for more than 10 minutes and go, yep, that's you. So again, it helps you assess, is what I'm doing in line with what my natural passions are and desires? And am I going to be able to keep being who I am naturally? Or do I have to keep sucking it up and being somebody I'm not? You know, and that goes into the, you find something that you love to do, you never work a day in your life, you know, kind of a thing. If you're doing what you're naturally gifted at and what you love doing, then you truly enjoy every day. It doesn't make it easy every day. It doesn't mean there aren't ups and downs, but you can help assess culture and job position and roles and responsibilities to make sure that what you're doing is what you really want to be doing, with at least some kind of a filter that gives you clarity on it, where otherwise I didn't really know. Again, I kind of knew it, but it helped me validate what I thought I already knew when it came to a career.
Awesome. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, and that is, what have we not talked about today that you want listeners to know?
Jeez, I don't know. Life is hard, you know, and through that perseverance, you become better at who you are, right? The best training I've been through, you know, SEER, Arctic Warfare, Arctic Survival, are things you look at and go, that was never fun. But you come out in the end a better person and a more capable person in the end. So transition is hard. Go into it with a mindset that it's going to hurt. There's things you're not going to figure out, but never look down, never quit. You know, no matter what it is, there's a light at the end. And in the end, you become better as a result. So never give up. You know, again, I was listening to another podcast. Can't remember what it is. I think I remember the number, but the Heroes for Horses or whatever, about taking people through trials. And through those trials, you become aware of who you are and what you can truly overcome. And that's part of it. Like, you know, life is never a map. Civilian life doesn't have a cookie cutter roadmap, but you can invent it. You can create it. You will stumble, fail great. There's another concept I think I heard on one of your podcasts, you know, fail well, you know, and quit well, right? And make a better choice and just pick back up and keep on going. So I guess that's it. And God has a plan, right? I never knew what my plan was, but there is a plan, and keep believing. And if I can help you, give me a call. Jessica, send out my email. I would love to talk to you no matter what, with no judgment whatsoever, because clearly I failed in the military. I've had some huge roadblocks and stumbles in life, and I'd love to help you if I can.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate your generosity. I appreciate your honesty. And it's just refreshing to hear, you know, we people overemphasize the Instagram aspects of their life. And to me, that's not really helpful. But what is helpful is hearing the nicks and scars and bruises that we pick up on along the way and what we learn and how we adapt. And I love that sense of purpose in your journey, that the setbacks and the failures, like, they're not pleasant at the time, and they're probably still not pleasant now. And yet they get you to where you are, and you learn from them. And I have more than my fair share of failures and just kind of just things I regret. And those help me become the man that I am and that do the things that I want to do in life. And so I think it's a great reminder for those of you listening who may be in that crucible experience right now, or may just be having the tar beat out of you, to have that faith that it is for a purpose, even if you don't understand it now, and it will help you learn and grow into someone. And so thank you, Josh. I'll add all of these notes in the show notes at beyonduniform.org, contact information, those things. But thank you for sharing your story today.
You are very welcome, Justin. I love what you're doing. I love Beyond the Uniform. It's been a great resource. I recommend that again as another resource, but you already know that because they're listening anyway. appreciate it. It's been great. It's an honor to be here and an honor to help out in any way I can.
Awesome. Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Siri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.